What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode number 149. This week, we're talking to Austin Stone from Tactical Approach Outdoors, who has been on episode 73, 80, 85, 98, 114, 139, and now for a league-leading seventh time, 149. I always enjoy talking to him. Obviously, we have a lot of great conversations in the past about different strategies and stuff, and especially public land stuff. He kills mature deer consistently on public ground. He's a wealth of knowledge when it comes to doing that, and that's what we talked about this week. We got into the buck that he shot this year, kind of the events that led up to that, what he thought was maybe the most important keys to his success this year in harvesting that buck, and then just kind of in general for, again, consistently killing mature bucks, and especially on public ground. We got into a lot of good stuff. I think you guys are going to enjoy it, so let's get into it here on episode number 149. This is the Ridge Hunter Outdoors Podcast. All right, let's do it. Let's jump right in there with your season, man. Obviously, you finally got on a buck, but last time we talked, like I said before we get on here, there was some stuff that was still up in the air about when or where you're going to be able to hunt, and you were kind of going in maybe a little bit blind on some places as far as being able to do in-season scouting and whatnot. So how did it all happen, and what led up to you finally killing your buck?
Yeah, it was kind of an interesting season. You know, my primary property and the bucks I was on, it was kind of a managed hunt. So it's a draw kind of situation. And the way they had the property set up, it's broke down in units, and they could, you don't know what units are open per se from week to week. Mm-hmm. So you kind of actually daily have to check the website and, you know, see what's open, see what's closed. And this year was a very odd year in the sense of the units that typically don't close that often were closed all season. Okay. And it just so happened to be that that was exactly where I had these deer located and right. Pinned. Right.
Of course.
So I was hoping that it would open up, you know, so I scouted what I could. I had 2 days to hunt in October there, so I got 2 days in, did some scouting, and saw some deer. I saw a sign that I needed to see that kind of confirmed that the bucks I was after were still kind of in the areas that they should be. Mm-hmm. But after that, man, it stayed closed for the rest of the season until in middle to end of December.
Man.
And so it got to be one of those things like, well, I'm not going to just wait around and not hunt, you mm-hmm. know, and you know, that was my plan A, B, and C all into
right
that area, because it's a very large area, so I had a lot of ground to hunt,
mm-hmm.
multiple locations to get after not only the two bucks that I had located, but multiple other bucks that tend to use the area. And you know, that there's a really good number of really good mature buck density in that on that property. So, you know, the spots that I was finding these bucks in, the other bucks use also. So it was kind of one of those things where, you know, I had all my chips into these locations that mm-hmm. typically would not be an issue, but this year was.
Right.
So I ended up moving to a property that was closer to home. I scouted it a year and a half before this season, right? A year and a half ago. And the only time that I scouted it was just during some postseason scouting, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I found a few locations that I liked and something I wanted to pay attention to. And then one part of the property I hadn't got the chance to get to yet, right? Which ended up being actually where I killed my buck.
Okay.
So I started hunting this area in the locations. I started on the sign that I knew from a year and a half ago, you know, see what's fresh kind of thing. I found a few of the community scrapes where were there, they were fresh, and that they're using it. I saw a bunch of deer every time I sat, which was awesome to see.
Mm-hmm.
And but I was kind of having issues with finding the maturity level on that property and in the locations that I was at. So I was getting a little concerned because I really wasn't even seeing real mature does.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, that typically is an issue if you're seeing, you know, pretty much all three and under.
Right.
Between does and bucks. Even though, you know, I saw a few bucks that had real great potential, but they weren't there yet. So I made a move and, you know, especially seeing that this property wasn't opening up, say, like, okay, I need to get aggressive into finding something else. So I moved into this, took a day scout into this part of the property that is really hard to get to. And I've been wanting to get to it for a while. And I finally just went ahead and went to it. And man, I found the best sign that I found on that whole property.
Yeah.
I mean, it was kind of one of those areas that it's 2 miles from one parking lot. If you want to walk, it's a mile and a half from the other parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
And then the only other way to access it is via boat. Right. And even if you boat it in, you're talking about, you know, a mile and a half paddle and then at least another third of a mile to half a mile walk back to these locations. Right.
Man.
So it was kind of tough to get to. Great underbrush, lots of big oaks, and the scrapes were there. The deer density was there. And I found a spring up in the hills also. So that was a great find. So I'm bagging that intel for next October. You know what I mean? Is that scrape. So, or not scrape, but the spring.
Right. Right.
It was surrounded by scrapes and it was on that perfect, north facing slope. So it would be great for a southern wind kind of sit. And so I'm banking that intel for next year, but, going into hunt this area. So I found the sign and then I moved in on the next cold front basically, which was just, I can't remember if it was the next day or the day after, but I moved down the next cold front, set the initial tree that I found. And I had an encounter with the buck I ended up shooting.
And what day was this? What, like, when was this all going down?
Man, I think this was when I had, this was end of October time frame, kind of almost that Halloween week.
Okay.
When I had this first encounter with this buck.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw a bunch of other young bucks, a lot of does. It was a busy morning, but I saw this buck. He was about 60 yards through the brush behind me. And I tried grunting to him. He wasn't interested. But I saw him twice use that same trail and same area. So, I hunted there for that day. I hunted the next day, the next morning, and the wind was going to be shifting funny for the last half of the day. So when I got down, I did a little scouting a little bit further back. I actually took it a little deeper.
Mm-hmm.
I found an adjustment tree, which is the tree I ended up killing him out of. But I found the adjustment tree to the trail that he was using when I visually saw him that time, that day.
Mm-hmm.
And I found some more sign further back. So I gave it some time. I had some other things that I was doing for a couple of weeks. I wasn't able to make it back out there for a couple of weeks. But I came back out. I hunted a little bit deeper. Had an encounter with another buck. A little bit smaller, but a nice four-year-old, you know, real good potential.
Mm-hmm.
Buck, and he never gave me a shot, but he wasn't quite as nice as the buck I ended up shooting, which is, you know. So sat there a couple days and then moved back to my tree about maybe a week later, that adjustment tree I told you about.
Mm-hmm.
So far I've had four sits back in that bottom. Every hunt I've seen no less than eight deer. and
that's how you know you're in the right spot, right?
Two of the four sits I encountered a shooter.
Man. If you're like most hunters out there, at some point you've dreamed of having a piece of hunting ground to call your own. Maybe you finally decided to make those dreams a reality. If so, you need to talk to our guy, Rodney Hawkins. Rodney is a land specialist with Midwest Farm and Land. If you haven't heard of them, they aren't your average real estate company. While they do deal in traditional residential and commercial real estate, their specialty is recreational and farm ground. With agents like Rodney serving across the state of Illinois, no matter what you're looking for, they can find it. Even if you want to sell what you already have to upgrade, downgrade, reinvest, whatever, they've got you covered. For more information, you can contact Rodney at 618-925-3153, and he'll get you taken care of. On top of what he does for MFL, Rodney also has his own company called RG Outdoors. They currently carry hard and soft-sided blinds, blind chairs, tree stands, and cameras from Radix Hunting, Tacticam trail cameras, Fission e-bikes, and he's adding new stuff all the time. I've personally used all of these products, and I'm beyond happy with every one of them. The Fission e-bike is a game changer, and you will not find a better one for the price. If you're interested in anything RG Outdoors has to offer, you can send them a message to their Facebook page, RG Outdoors, email them at rgoutdoors@yahoo.com, or again, just call Rodney directly at 618-925-3153.
So, like, I'm feeling pretty good about this spot. I've got really good creek bed ditch access, so I can stay down into the ditch most of the way into my stand location. So I had really good access getting in and out, and easy getting into the tree once I did pop up onto the ridge, you know. So it was fantastic access, which allowed, you know, me to get in and out, you know, like I wanted to do, right, and not mess up. But I moved back to about the next week. I moved back to this. Now we're getting into middle of November. Sorry.
Let me jump in just for a second, because I want to hit on something that you mentioned. You said you saw. Yep. So at one place you were seeing a lot. You were seeing several deer, but not like a bunch of mature deer, right? And then you got to this point and you're seeing, you know, no less than eight deer a sit, and I'm assuming some mature does, and obviously the shooters. Is that something on public land where, like, it's affirmation that you're in the right spot, even if you're not seeing those shooter bucks? Like, if you're back there, you're seeing a pretty high number of deer, and there's mature does mixed in. Like, that's, you know, you're in the spot, right?
Oh, 100%. And that, and you know, that's the kind of thing you look for, because, you know, you can't run cameras on public in Kansas,
right?
You know, it's getting to be more and more states are a lot like that. So something that I have found through doing this is, even if you don't have visual confirmation of a mature buck yet, if you are actively seeing mature does sprinkled in amongst all of the other does, there's a pretty decent chance you've got mature bucks that are going to use that spot.
Right.
So that it's that area at least, right? Mm-hmm. You just kind of got to fine tune your location at that point. But if I'm in an area where I'm seeing a lot of deer, but I'm only really seeing young deer, including does, typically that means that spot's only going to be good during the rut. Mm-hmm. So that means I need to make a move. And a lot of times they're young like that, because they're getting really hunted in that specific location.
Right. Right? The mature deer have figured out that there's pressure there. They've moved on.
Yeah. Deer are getting harvested, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's typically what I'll go off of. And I was seeing that. And then on top of that, you know, having the visual confirmation basically right away of those bucks, it just helps.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
So, yeah, that's a good point though, when you're looking for specific locations on public, something to think about. Mm-hmm. But moved back to this adjustment tree that I located after I saw my buck that first time. And then that next sit, the first sit I sat in that adjustment tree, I encountered him again. And he came walking in and I mean, on a beeline through the brush, heading my direction, and I was up and I got drawn. And what I didn't know, which my GoPro showed me later, what I didn't know is I had some smaller bucks behind me.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't know I was there. I had a lot of cover in my tree, even though it wasn't very high. But they kind of hung him up a little bit. He was looking in my direction, which I was kind of concerned he saw me.
Right.
But never spooked. He never ran off, nothing like that. He was just kind of looking at those bucks. And dude, I held full draw for over 2 minutes. I counted. I saw the time frame on my GoPro, and it was right around 2 minutes and 20 seconds. It was ridiculous.
Holy cow.
I had him at 30 yards. At that point, a frontal shot, and he was about 10 feet from giving me a perfect 30-yard quartering, not quartering, broadside shot.
Mm-hmm.
So he just hung up behind some brush.
Yep.
And then it got to the point my arms were basically giving out, so I had to let down real gently. Luckily, didn't spook him, and he just kind of moseyed on off. He stayed behind the brush and just kind of moseyed on off. So yeah. That was a killer encounter.
That's big that you didn't spook him right there too, because who knows? If he sees you let down, you probably don't end up killing him.
100%. And so one thing, kind of a trick for you to think about when you think about that, when something is coming or going straight towards you or straight away from you, it's very difficult to judge movement.
Mm-hmm.
Right, once you get movement side to side or at an angle, it's very easy to catch.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if you stay compact, and that's where I kind of dropped my shoulder and I got real tight,
right,
my elbow a little bit. I got real tight with my arm positioning and let down very compact and straight towards him.
Right.
You know what I mean? Where I made sure I didn't have any weird side movement. I wasn't moving up and down. Mm-hmm. My elbow was not moving out to the side. I became real compact, and I lowered very as slow as I could and straight towards him.
Right.
Which I think was because he was looking right at me. So if I didn't do it as carefully as I could, he would have busted me, and then I would never have shot him.
Probably. For sure. Yeah. I mean, most likely.
Yeah. Cause I killed him the next day.
Yeah. You definitely wouldn't have killed him the next day, I don't think.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely wouldn't have killed him the next day. So it was kind of one of those things, you know, is an interesting position. Probably with a crossbow, you probably had a shot.
Right.
You know what I mean? But with a compound, you definitely did not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of one of those weird situations, those bow hunting situations where yep. bucks live when other methods they don't live.
Right.
So, but the next day I was hunting the exact same tree, went back in, and it was had quite a bit of activity all through the day, and actually had a hot doe come by, so that kind of excited me, obviously, but. Nothing mature yet. And then right at noon, he was paralleling through my set through the brush, the exact same trail he was working on the day before.
Mm-hmm.
And this time, instead of coming towards me, though, he stayed behind the brush. So I was trying to call to him. He really wasn't interested in my calling, but he wasn't in a hurry. He was just kind of moseying. And then right at that point, I hear the woods just come to life behind me.
Mm-hmm.
And I look back, and there's a doe, a small buck, and a big buck all just hauling through the woods. Mm-hmm. I mean, just tearing through the woods behind me. So I threw out some Hail Mary grunts and snorts to the big buck to try to get him wheeled around, since he was real aggressive.
Right.
And he ended up fighting the small buck right there. So, mind you, at this point, I am positioned perfectly in the middle between the commotion behind me and the buck I'm trying to kill.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm trying to get the big buck's attention behind me since he was more aggressive, but he wasn't, he was thinking it was a small buck. He wasn't paying attention to me.
Was he bigger than the one you ended up killing?
Do what?
Was he bigger than the one you ended up shooting?
He was a little bit bigger.
Yeah.
But he was a little bit bigger of a frame. He wasn't significantly larger, but he was a little bit bigger.
Right.
I had never seen him before.
Okay.
So, you know, and then at that point, you know, why wait on a deer that you're trying to kill if he gives you a shot versus trying to kill a deer that may only be there because of the rut.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
So at that point, I hear the brush start moving and my buck is tearing through the brush heading their direction.
Mm-hmm.
So I stand up, draw my bow and get it anchored. And right at that point, and I'm turning all at the same time here, and he stops with just big enough wind window to squeeze a shot through at 20 yards. And I'm like squatting down a little bit and leaning over a little bit to try to fit this arrow through this hole.
Yep.
It's just kind of one of those instinctive shots where the pin hits the shoulder and you just let it rip.
Right.
And I smoked him. It was perfect center punch, the heart, and he didn't go anywhere.
Heck yeah.
But it's insane how fast that happened.
Well, yeah. I mean, that can, when you get that chasing in there like that, everything just like, I mean, the woods just explodes. It's crazy. You were right in the middle of all that.
It was insane. I don't know that I've ever had that instinctive of a shot with my compound.
Mm-hmm.
Like I usually have at least a second to make sure I'm good,
right.
But this is also why you practice, man. You know, mm-hmm. It's one of those things where your muscle memory, you automatically go to your perfect anchor. Your peep sight's perfect. You're already lined up with your sight. So it was kind of one of those subconscious real quick checks.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew I was lined up. I knew I had a clean shot and I took it.
Yep. Yep.
Kind of things. And it was, but it was pretty wild from the point I saw him to the point I shot him was probably 60 seconds. And probably less than 10 seconds for the point that he started, that the commotion happened behind me,
mm-hmm.
to when I'm standing up and drawing, you know, it's just,
that's awesome.
It happened incredibly fast.
That's the kind of thing that can happen during the rut. That's the kind of hunt, the kind of day that we're all chasing in November, right? Like that's what you're,
oh, 100%.
That's the one we're dreaming about.
Yeah. It is. And it's crazy. So that was my third encounter with that buck.
That's wild. And especially on public land too.
Yes. That's something that doesn't happen very often at all.
Right.
So it's one of the, and it's a testament to, it just shows you how important access is.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I wasn't careful with my access and careful how I approached that hunt for that month, I would have run to that spot. Because he was so on pattern for that location, I could have easily messed it up.
Right.
So it was just, yeah, I mean, it was pretty fun actually getting to kind of fine tune that set. And that's what it's about. You know, I could have shot him the first encounter with a gun, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, with a bow, you had to make that adjustment. Then about a month later, after I find that adjustment tree, I almost shoot him, and then I shoot him.
Right.
So that was a pretty fun hunt.
That's the fun cat and mouse part of bow hunting, too, I think. It's like you said, if you've got a gun, if it's during gun season or whatever, you can go out there, especially if you're in a state where you can shoot rifles, and especially centerfire.
Yeah.
You can go out there, and you don't even really have to get that lucky. You just have to be
close.
Yeah. I mean, in some cases, if you can shoot it within 300 yards of where you need to be, in some places, yep. You know, even farther than that, like,
yeah,
you just have to be there. You don't even really have to be in the right spot. And that's not taking anything away from the guys that do it like that. It's just with a bow, like you're saying, you go and you see him. Okay. Now do I make an adjustment? And second,
yep.
Yes, I need to, what adjustment do I make? Where do I go? And then yep. You make that adjustment. You almost get it done. And then it's like, okay, like I'm in the right spot. I need to stick with this and it's going to happen. And then bam, the next day, you know, you end up killing him. But that's, to me, that's one of the best things about bow hunting. It's not just the kill. It's not just shooting something with big antlers on its head, but it's playing cat and mouse and finally besting a mature deer, right?
Yeah.
Like at their game, finally getting out there, getting it done.
Yeah, no, I mean, and you know, so it, this deer definitely was not an aggressive deer, mm-hmm. right? So he wasn't, he never responded to any call I had. It looked like he, that was the first time I saw any kind of aggressive type motion from him, right? Mm-hmm. Everything else was very just observant.
You think it was because that doe was hot and it was all happening so close to him?
I think it was.
And he had the visual too.
And it was his spot.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You know, I think that was 100% his spot, and that this doe was in his spot and that other buck was too. So I think that's what kind of fired him up a little bit also.
Right. And a buck he probably wasn't familiar with.
Yeah, yeah, true. I mean, that definitely could have been a buck that he wasn't familiar with, you know, and he was going to check it out.
Was he the biggest, the one you shot, was he the biggest deer that you saw in that area other than the one that was there that day?
Yes,
so he was. I wonder if that's one of those deals where, like you said, it's his spot. He kind of knows the bucks in the area. So if he hears one grunting or snort wheezing, it's like no factor to him. You know what I mean? Like he just kind of...
True, yeah.
He knows what's in the area, but then there's this new buck in that he sees. He probably smells it, you know. Who knows? Maybe he smelled that buck on a scrape the night before, and then bam, there he is, and he's in my spot. You know, there's so many variables, but that's interesting because you do learn the personalities of these deer, and it's just kind of, you can dive deep on what actually makes them tick, why they do certain things sometimes, and sometimes they do other things.
Absolutely, yeah, and that's kind of one of those things that I found a lot on public land is areas that have a lower density of mature bucks, mm-hmm. those mature bucks don't respond to aggressive tactics.
Yeah.
Right. That's where, you know, I typically, I never take those aggressive tactics. Honestly, I almost never carry rattling antlers. Mm-hmm. It's a waste of space in my pack.
Right.
And it's just, I've never had any success with them. I've seen too many deer get bumped with them, mm-hmm. and I typically play the ghost in a tree ambush. That deer's not going to know I'm there till it's too late.
Right.
Situation.
Our partners at Flambeau Outdoors have some of the best solutions in the industry for your decoy and storage needs. They're focused on innovation that matters, and they build their products to last. They're probably most known for their whitetail, waterfowl, and turkey decoys, and that's for good reason. They've got a lot of quality options at great price points in each category. The Boss Buck is a personal favorite of mine in their whitetail line, and I've been throwing their Stormfront mallards in front of duck blinds for years now. Don't sleep on their storage solutions either, though. Whether it's fishing tackle, firearms, ammo, or archery equipment, they've got you covered. They just stepped up their archery storage game, too, with the new Formula Bow Case. It might just be the best bow case on the market. We've been using ours for several months now, and I'm continually impressed with the ease of use and security they provide. Make the most of your time outdoors with Flambeau. Realism that gets results.
Unless it's areas that I found that have a larger density of mature bucks, mm-hmm. then they tend to be a little bit more aggressive just because there's more competition.
Yep. Yep.
You know, so I think this deer didn't have really any competition hardly, which made him stick to a certain pattern that he was. And he knew the deer in the area, and probably the does for the most part came to him. Mm-hmm. Right. So it was kind of one of those that could have been a totally non-resident buck that would moved into the area for that short period of time. Mm-hmm. And he was trying to figure out what was going on.
Yep. Unlucky for him.
Yeah. That. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And I mean, I guess good for you. You know, there's another one in that area. It sounds like it's a pretty good spot.
It's I mean, and the way that spot hunts, it hunts really big, just that the way the ridges and the draws and the land itself just kind of, it lays the way mm-hmm. it lays, the vegetation diversity in that general area, mm-hmm. it hunts big. So I'd be curious to, I'm going to be curious to really get in there, you know, this off season, do more scouting and, you know, going into September, October and start doing hunts and observation sits and see if these deer keep a very small little location, you know, right. If these big bucks are separating themselves and keeping small little tight spots, but staying away from each other.
Yeah.
You know, so it'll be interesting to see what all I observe through this next year and go from there. Cause it's a pretty sweet spot and it's just tore up with sign, ridiculous amount of sign. So, awesome. You know, there's more than one good buck using that spot.
Yeah, for sure. And if it's one of those places where, like you said, it's so hard to get to, there's obviously a reason that all those deer are in there. And if it does have that kind of terrain, the holding capacity of it goes up as well. So like there's opportunity for, like you said, obviously more than one potential target, which just makes your chances of killing one go even higher.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So that's kind of the fun, you know, and that's part of what I like about public land is just having the options. Cause you know, if that first property was like, say it was a lease property, it was the only property I had any of my hunting put towards and all my chips were in that specific, you know, bag. And then that hunt didn't work out. I couldn't transfer over to plan D, E, F. You know what I mean?
Right.
So make those adjustments. So that is something I like about public, you know, and then it's the same time. It's so frustrating because you have no control.
Right.
For those factors. Yep. But yeah, I mean, this was very much so a plan B type of season for me.
Yeah. Well, it's good. It still worked out. And I want to ask you, like, if you had to pick one thing that you would put your finger on that ended up killing you that deer, maybe it's the adjustments, maybe it's the run and gun scouting and hunting kind of style that got you to him or recognizing what you were looking at. What do you think, like, what's one overarching thing you think ended up killing you that deer ultimately?
I think it was keeping an open mind.
Okay.
Is probably the number one thing. It was keeping an open mind and not getting fixated on one property, one location, and keeping that run and gun mobile scouting. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I'm a firm believer in scout more than you hunt.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
And then at the same time, when you find a location, you have to give it a chance to produce.
Yeah.
And show you what's there, you know. So I hunted this other location on that same property and found out, like I said, mostly young deer. Okay, well, let's go find this, go check out this other spot and see what it shows. Sign was significantly better, started sitting it, and obviously age class was significantly better.
Mm-hmm.
So it was keeping an open mind and staying mobile. And then once you found your location, being very precise on how you hunt it and how you access it, you know, so, and not being the reason you mess it up, basically.
Yeah. The last thing you want to do is find one of those places where no one else has been and then screw it up because you weren't, like, being careful.
Yeah. So to answer your question, I'd say probably keeping an open mind with that mobile scouting hunting method. And then once I found the location, being extremely precise with when and how I accessed that location.
Mm-hmm. Man, that's big for private land as well. Like,
it is
the open mind thing. And of course the access, but like the not getting fixated on either one of your places to hunt. If you have more than one, because obviously some guys don't, but if you've got more than one piece of property you can hunt, not just getting locked in on that one because I got one picture of a giant in the middle of the night. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or even if it's a deer that he's fairly regular, but you just cannot seem to get on him. Like, you can get fixated on one deer on one property. And if that's your goal for the year and it's that deer or bust, whatever. But if you're wanting to just kill a mature deer or you've got multiple targets, like, if you get so fixated on one, you can overhunt a property really easy. Like you said, if you're not paying attention to your access and hunting it on the right days and stuff like that, you can mess it up pretty quick. And then you've ruined basically your whole season instead of kind of spreading it around and maybe giving other places other opportunities. And even if they don't produce the first couple sits, like, you know, don't give up on them.
100%. And you know, that's where I love that saying. It says, you know, you can't kill deer while sitting on the couch. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, technically you can.
Right.
And it's by sitting on the couch when the conditions are bad. When mm-hmm. the conditions say that you should not be out there or accessing that specific stand location, when those conditions do not condone that hunt, mm-hmm. don't force that hunt. You know what I mean? Because yep. if you force that hunt, you could run it on the next hunt. Yep. Run it for the season, really.
Yep.
But if you would sit on the couch that day and then go out 3 days later when the conditions are right, you probably kill that deer.
Yeah. Yeah, you know? I've said that several times.
It's kind of one of those things where, and then two, you know, like you said, if you have enough options, mm-hmm. you can satisfy that hunting itch.
Right.
Without ruining your key locations.
Yep. Yep.
You know, so it's kind of finding that perfect balance of where you're fulfilling your hunting itch and desire for the year, right? Your mm-hmm. your sit time, mm-hmm. but not over hunting and over pressuring the locations that are going to kill you that monster when the conditions are right, when yeah. the time is right.
Yep. I've said it several times, probably on the podcast, but you know, you can't kill that deer tomorrow today, right? But you can yeah. absolutely keep yourself from killing that deer tomorrow today. If you go in on a bad day, you can ruin the next month's worth of hunting in one day.
You can. Yes, you can.
But you can't kill them 2 weeks down the road today if today's not the right day, you know?
Yeah. No, it's 100% correct. You know, and yeah, I mean, that's just this, it's a balancing act with your hunting pressure. And I feel like, honestly, that's probably the number one most important management tactic you can implement on your hunting property, mm-hmm. even if you don't do anything else. You don't do any other habitat, food plots, nothing else. But you make your property the safe place.
Yep.
You will see better success than your neighbors.
Yep. And that doesn't mean you can't hunt it either, right? Like you can, yep. you yeah. just have to be smart about when and how you're hunting it.
100%. Yeah. It's being very precise with your access, being precise with your stand locations, and not just setting up a spot because you like that tree.
Right.
Or setting up a spot because, you know, it's a little bit easier to get to, mm-hmm. you know, it's setting a spot because you know that the wind and the thermals are going to take your scent this direction with these specific conditions. And this is the food source and typical movement pattern that you see. And then it comes down to making the, you know, as good of a decision as you can make on converging movement, you know, and placing your stand location to that converging movement that allows your wind and scent and access to all work perfectly. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah. It's definitely a big puzzle that has to be put together, but if you want to consistently kill those mature deer, that's what it takes.
It is. And with access, you got to think about your ground scent.
Yep.
You know, you're not crossing over any point that the buck that you're trying to kill could possibly cross over your ground scent, you mm-hmm. know? And you can only be so perfect with that. Like, yep. there's only so much you can do, but then it comes down to, well, just make sure you're taking your scent control seriously and we're just increasing the odds as much as we can to make that happen. And you're betting on the locations for the higher odds movement, basically.
Yep. Man, I tell you what, the property that you were on, that cabin property, I got an e-bike this year, and like for ground scent and entering and exiting, like I can whip that thing down the driveway. I keep it mowed. I mow it like there right at the end of September. And even if I need to, like I'm not scared to go in there in October and run the tractor through and just mow the path down. That way, like when I was walking, same idea, but now, especially on that bike, like I don't have weeds and stuff brushing up against my pants. It's just a clean path. Ride that thing. Like I can ride it all the way up underneath the tree.
That's awesome.
And that's the best like ground scent I'm going to have. Lack of. But what you're saying, if you don't have that luxury, and I don't in all my spots for sure, you can go into a spot and not get busted 3 or 4 days in a row from the stand or, you know, even on your entry or exit. But, you know, let's say you walk out that evening and now your target buck walks across where your pants happen to brush up against some briars or something, and he gets a whiff of it, and like you're always taking that chance when you go in and come out. So even if you feel like you're not bumping deer, you are still putting pressure on every time you go in, right? There's more and more impact that's kind of compounded, and more chances every time you go in there that that's going to happen.
And you know, and that's a good point. And, you know, something I think about, I take a little bit more stock into the ground scent than I do even my scent in the tree, right? Because the more ground scent and intrusion that I leave, the more opportunity that buck has to cross my path.
Yep.
Because our ground scent's going to stick around for days.
Yep.
So it's not just going to wash away and be gone in 12 hours.
That, right.
Your ground scent's going to stick around. So the more you go in, if you're not careful with your boot care and you're not careful with your pant care and your scent control, and you're not careful about, you know, the type of vegetation that you're walking through to access that location, you know, the more likely that deer is to come across your trail at midnight.
Mm-hmm.
And even the does, not even the buck, the rest of the deer herd come across your trail and become aware and smart to your location and your access. And then at that point you've put a red flag up for the herd, which in turn has put a red flag up for him. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So no, I mean, that ground scent is a crucial piece of the puzzle to being able to get away with hunting pressure and hunting stand locations, you know, multiple times.
Yep. Because like you said too, when you're up in the tree, you don't worry about that as much because you're generally going to have the wind. And even walking in and walking out, you should have a good wind where it's not going to be blowing in a bad direction, right? But once you get to that tree, you've got your wind blowing in the direction that's favorable to you. So is there a chance something could walk downwind of you? Sure. But it's most likely that they're not if you're setting up right, if you're going to the right places. But that wind direction doesn't really matter when you leave that ground scent. You know, you've still got however many hundreds of yards of that is there's likely for something to walk across. So,
Absolutely. Yeah,
I completely agree that that's a huge thing I think gets overlooked. We talk a lot about, you know, entry and exit routes and stuff like that, and that's a big part of it. I think that's probably the number one thing in all combined that keeps people from killing mature deer, you know, even if they think they're paying attention to the wind and all that. It's entry and exit and how much intrusion you're actually causing from all that kind of stuff we just talked about.
100%, you know, and so this buck I'm hunting on my plan A buck, right?
Mm-hmm.
The location he is in is quote unquote easy access.
Right.
Okay. But it's very dangerous access and high risk of bumping him before I get a chance. Right. So it's going to require a little bit of creativity, and I've got an idea how I want to do it, and I've got to test the creek bed, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to take some prep, but if I can access it through the creek bed like I want to access it through the creek bed, I'll be able to completely alleviate my one ground scent, and then two, my direction of access into my stand.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of going around the areas that he typically, you know, is bedding in and he's using, I'm completely just going around that and kind of splitting it right down the middle through this creek, this deep creek bed.
Right.
And then I can pop up onto the top 20 yards from my tree.
Yeah. That if you so, got a creek if or, I could, or something like this, like that, like that's as close to underground as you're going to get.
As close as it gets, you know, and then I can keep all it myself completely underground and the does won't catch me unless they're just on top of me. And then that's just bad luck.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But, at least not walking through the leaves, making a bunch of noise and, you know, not leaving ground scent on all of the vegetation with that he's using and whatnot. So it's a very delicate access because it's either I'm kind of splitting the area that he's bedding and using, and also those are bedding and using. So, so it's a delicate little balance on my access there that I feel like if I can do what I want to do, I can win against him.
Yep. Yep.
I have a feeling that I may not have won this last year, but the year before when I was really hunting him, I may have, you know, had him a little wised up to me being there just because the access I was given.
Right.
So I don't want to say because he never shifted pattern, but I can't say he was really wised up. But, you know, hey, if he saw my little red light.
Yeah. If it was just enough.
Just enough. You know, maybe he wasn't spooked, but maybe he didn't use that area that day, you know?
Yep.
So it's access is probably more important than your stand location, to be honest with you. Yep.
I think you're right. Yeah. I don't think you're off base by saying that at all. Hey everybody. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Ridge Hunter Outdoors podcast. If you've made it to this point, hopefully you're enjoying the show. And if you are, go over to our Facebook page and our Instagram, give us a follow. It's Ridge Hunter Outdoors. We also have a private Facebook group. That's Ridge Hunter Nation. You can go over there and answer a couple questions. And if you're a regular listener of the podcast or you watch any of our shows on YouTube or Carbon TV, you get in that group and just use it as your normal hunting group. Share your success, your failures, pictures, whatever you got. And we'll also give you some extra content in there. I'll ask questions on that, maybe do some surveys occasionally. And we'll also give you guys the opportunity to ask questions for any of our guests that we might have coming on, if we have them lined up in time and that's available. You'll find that at Ridge Hunter Nation. That's on Facebook. Our website is ridgehunteroutdoors.com. That's where you're going to see our scent line, Ridge Hunter Scents, our buck tarsal spray, doe tarsal spray, and our calming spray. All of our apparel is available on the website, and our food plot seed, when it is in stock, is available on the website too. If you want any of that stuff, make sure you use our discount code RHOPOD or FULLDRAW, all caps on either of those, no space, and you get 10% off your entire order. We also have our entire catalog of podcasts on the website, and our video series are available on there as well. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any other audio platform, give us a like, follow, subscribe, whatever it lets you do, and that'll let you guys know when our episodes come out. They're not always as consistent as we want them to be, but we try to shoot for Monday and Friday. Sometimes it gets on a Tuesday or a Saturday maybe for an episode, and that way you'll know when they come out. It also really helps us without costing you anything. If you're listening to this on YouTube, hopefully you're already subscribed to the channel. If you're not, make sure you do that. If you're not listening to this on YouTube and you're not subscribed, make sure you go over there and do that at Ridge Hunter Outdoors, just like everything else. That's where you'll find our Fall Pursuit Show, Spring Strutting, all of our off-season vlogs will be on there, and much more. If you guys see a video or are listening to a podcast on there and you're enjoying it, just drop us a comment. Hey, good show. Really enjoyed it. Something simple. Give the video a like. That really, really helps us out. And again, it doesn't take much of your time at all. You can also find Fall Pursuit on Carbon TV, and Spring Strutting will be on there this spring as well. So make sure you go over to Carbon TV. They have a lot of great shows to offer, and ours will be on there also. Thanks for listening, guys. We really appreciate you tuning in when you do. Now let's get back to the episode. Now, we've covered a lot of good stuff here and a lot of tactics and strategy kind of stuff, but with tactics, why don't we wrap up here? Tell everybody what you got coming up for tactical approach in the near future, for the new year. Obviously, it's the first time we've talked since 2025 rolled around. So, you got anything big coming up? Is it going to be kind of the same stuff? And What do you got coming up for the people over there at TAO?
Well, I mean, 2025 is the stuff that I'm putting in place. It's going to be building off of last year, and with, you know, I probably already have 50 plus acres planned for planting this spring. And, you know, I've got consulting clients rolling in, and, you know, I've been pretty busy with that. Been doing a lot of brush clearing and getting ready for getting all the habitat work done, you know, while the vegetation is off the trees and it's more, it condones better, you know, tree work and brush work and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to make it public exactly what I'm implementing this year, the big addition to the company just yet, just because I'm working on finalizing a few things with it, but we've got some pretty big stuff coming this year that I'm putting into place that is going to, this should be a really big year for Tactical Approach.
Awesome.
So yeah, adding some more diversity to the business in a matter of speaking, adding some more opportunity for deer hunters and whatnot, and learning opportunities for folks, you know, not only for deer hunting, but also habitat work and different stuff along those lines. So we've got some really big things in the making that I just got to finalize a few things before I can go and make it public.
Mm-hmm. Awesome, man. Well, I look forward to hearing about it, and I'm sure everybody else does too. And I will link all your socials and whatnot in the description. You've been on, I don't know how many episodes now, so everybody, unless they're new, they ought to be familiar with you. But if not, there's plenty of episodes for them to go back and listen to you talk some more. You just, every time we talk, I feel like we get in some good stuff about definitely public land strategy and just getting into kind of the weeds on how to kill big deer. So it's always fun. And I appreciate you coming on kind of last minute here. And we'll do it again sometime soon, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, man. I appreciate you having me on every time you do. And, you know, I love our conversations. And I hope, you know, your listeners learn something from what we talk about. I feel like we've got a lot of information that we spitball off of each other.
For sure.
Forward. So.
For sure, man. Well, all right, we'll get out of here. I'll let you get off here and enjoy the rest of your night. So thank you again, man.
Absolutely, buddy. Thanks for having me on.